You're listening to episode 11 of Honest, Open, and Vulnerable. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Scarlett.
And this is an adult-oriented podcast. It includes language and material that may not be suitable for kids under 18. If you'd like to participate, you know, we definitely appreciate your feedback. We are on iTunes. And that link you can find on our website, hovpodcast.wordpress.com. We'll definitely appreciate any kind of feedback, and you can also subscribe on there, so you don't have to keep going back to our app or whatever. Okay, let's start all over. This is episode... No. But where was I? Oh, yes. Definitely appreciate feedback. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag HOVpodcast. You can send us an email, and that is HOVpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you're feeling really, really brave and want to leave us a voicemail, you can play on a future episode. That number is 231-846-8420.
And if you're interested, I do have a blog that I have just decided to make public. A couple weeks ago, I announced it. You can find that at inscarletstorm.wordpress.com. InScarletStorm is all one word, and it's one T. Scarlet is like the color. So if you're interested, check that out. It's a little morbid, it's a little dark, but it's meant to be kind of tongue-in-cheek too, so keep that in mind.
Well, it's also a reflection of whatever the hell's going through your head that day, so
and you wouldn't want to be trapped in my head sometimes, so I don't write in it every day. I do it probably once or twice a week. It's just a good outlet for me, and I've just decided to open it up for anybody who's interested. So that's at inscarletstorm.wordpress.com.
And that link you also find on our website. I do want to mention one thing that, well, we've talked about the Why Not documentary here on a couple episodes previously. I think it was episode 6 and 7. I may be wrong, but they recently mentioned us on their Tumblr account, which that got, you know, for me personally, I mean, that got me giggling and squeeing like a 13-year-old kid that, you know, got like a special edition, you know, comic book or something like that. You know, it was verifying for me on a deeper level than, say, you know, watching Matt Smith do, you know, with the Colonel Runaway speech or some kind of nerdy squee-inducing thing they see all the time on Doctor Who. But anyway, it was kind of at a deeper level than that, because for me, this podcast is very much, you know, opening my chest, pull my heart out, put it on a plate and say, you dig it? So, you know, the fact, and obviously, I mean, I know that this isn't what a lot of people would call a quote-unquote marketable podcast, because we kind of jump around a lot. So, you know, for someone to, you know, say, hey, you know, check this out, you know, it's very, it's very validating. That's the word I was looking for. I'm reduced to 2-cent words here, apparently. It's very validating for me, you know, the fact that, you know, again, this, I mean, for you know, again, I'm just putting this out there. I mean, this is very therapeutic for me, just because it's, you know, a little bit outside my comfort zone. Like the last 5 minutes haven't been an indication that I don't do this professionally. So again, I was very, you know, happy to see that, and then I'll definitely put their link up on the on the show notes. It's why not movie. That's not with a K. .tumblr.com. So, and again, I'll put that up in the show notes.
Let's see.
And last night, Scarlett and I went to the hockey game at DU, and I had tweeted the comment on my personal Twitter at @inspiration_flow that it felt like we had walked into a TARDIS made to look like Magnus Arena and got transported to North Dakota.
Yeah, and I wore the wrong colors. I wore North Dakota colors. I didn't do it on purpose, but oh well.
And I didn't look into see what, you know, the North Dakota state suit, what their team colors were. So, you know,
we were surrounded by them. That's all I know.
Yeah, there are quite a few fans of it, which there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it just felt odd because it felt more like an away game than a home game. And also, I do gotta say, I think the announcer was a little too into it, or I envision him. Well, I don't want to say too into it because it's fucking hockey. You're supposed to be into it. Shut up, Ryan. All right. But I just envision him, you know, spending an hour beforehand, like getting into some, you know, hard rock radio douche voice, because it was very much, this is the home of the DU Pioneers, you know. But I know that, you know, obviously you're supposed to play it up a little bit because, you know, you're an announcer at a hockey game, but I mean, I think he took it up a few notches too much, but that's just me.
Well, the crowd wasn't assisting him, so he had to do it because the crowd.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, he was asking, you know, make some noise, and Denver was like, no. You know, it was just not. It didn't feel like a Denver game.
Yeah, it was.
But I will say that the Denver goalie definitely earned his. Earned his money last night.
Well, they don't get paid, but unless he's getting a full ride scholarship or something, I don't know. But we don't know that. But in either case, he played really well.
He did what he was supposed to do. That's for sure. The other goalie, on the other hand,
he had a bit. He had a bit of an off night.
He had a really off night. I think he was nursing an injury.
Yeah, that's quite possible.
Kind of looked like that's what was going on.
He was shaking his right hand and massaging his arm quite a bit.
He just wasn't on his game, you could tell. But had our goalie not been paying attention,
if he wasn't,
we could have had our asses handed to to us just as easily. But
yeah, the Denver defense wasn't, you know, playing, you know, top notch, because I think North Dakota had they had more chances in close than Denver did. But you know, Denver found a way to, you know, to cash in on the small the opportunities they did get, and you know, they ended up winning 3-0, with one of them being an empty netter towards the end of the game,
which I wasn't impressed by the last goal, but that's just me.
Well, you know, empty netters usually aren't that impressive to begin with.
I think he screwed up because he kept leaving his goal.
Well, that's more the coach's decision than the goalie's, actually.
It was a stupid move.
Well, it was about 5 minutes left in the game, and I think they were short, like either both teams were, it was like 4-on-4 or one team was shorthanded or whatever, but you know, it was towards the end of the game, so they're like, all right, whatever, you know, let's just, you know, because they were down 2-0 at that point. So, I mean, I can see them wanting to try something, you know.
Well, and then I found it quite amusing that one fight broke out. Well, actually, it was three separate fights, but it was all at the same time. And it was in the last 5 minutes of the game. And it was like they coordinated it. It was quite interesting. But it didn't last very long. It was just a little...
No.
That the referees were right on it. But they were very sportsmanlike. And it was just an...
Well, that may also be a difference as far as the NCAA's... policy on fighting as opposed to professional leagues, because we are dealing with pretty young people here, like 18 up to maybe 22, 23 or so.
I still found it was an entertaining game, but the last, it was probably the last 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like you might as well just phone it in, because you're never going to catch up at this point. And
you never know.
Stranger, well, you're definitely not going to catch up when you keep pulling your goalie.
Not necessarily. I mean, you got to take every chance you can. When you're down two goals, and well, going into this game, both teams were tied. Mm-hmm. They had the same record. The North Dakota was second place behind, I think it was St. Cloud State or whatever, and Denver was third. And so by winning this game, Denver they switch spots, and so we're kind of getting towards I think we're around like a halfway mark. I don't really follow college hockey, so I don't but according to the schedule that they had in the little program I got, that we're at least to the halfway point of the season. So I mean, I don't fault the coach for trying to take some extra chances to try and tie it up. So
it was it was
definitely odd timing. I definitely agree with that, but
it was an okay game. I mean, it was a good game. It was a really good game, but the people in front of us were Dakota fans, and
well,
they were also douchebags, so I could have done without them. But the rest of it was, it was a good game,
and
just the last 5 minutes was just odd to me.
Yeah, and I want to say that's no knock on all North Dakota fans. Just the people sitting in front of us,
happened to be douchebags.
Yeah, I mean they were young guys, about college age, and
I'm pretty sure one of them was mentally deficient. I'm just saying, but.
Again, we're just commenting on the people sitting in front of us, not
all fans,
right?
Just the ones sitting in front of us.
and so kind of moving on there. Scarlett recently showed me a blog that really sparked my interest. It is, the blog post is called "Marriage Isn't for You" by Seth Adam Smith. I'll put the links on the show notes, and I thought it was really pretty well written. He was definitely writing from his own experience, that is for sure. So I don't doubt the credibility of what he's talking about. There is one point of contention that I have, though, and that one is one point that you made through the entire piece is that love is about making someone else happy. It's not about making yourself happy. And that I really don't, really, that ground my gears to use a, sort of for Family Guy, but anyway.
I think what he's saying is once the commitment is made, you stick it through. And it's not about you anymore. And I think that was the big thing that he was trying to work through in his own situation. And it is definitely pro-marriage. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
That's one form of commitment. And that's great. Monogamy works for some people. It doesn't work for everybody. It doesn't work for me. but that doesn't mean that it doesn't work for other people. And but it was very, I thought it was very, the way it was done was very well written, and I was just really impressed with the way that it was done. And basically it isn't about, it's not about what, you know, it's not about you, it's about, right, there are other people involved too.
Right.
And that was his whole point, that once you make that commitment, you stick it through.
Yeah, and all the other points he made were extra considerations you have to make when you're getting married, as opposed to, you know, just, I guess, just dating someone or whatever. But again, that whole point of, you know, I gotta do my best. I mean, in my opinion, no one else can make you happy. You have to, I mean, no one else is responsible for your own, for your happiness. You are responsible for your own happiness. So I think I may be taking this off of a totally different tangent or whatever, but again, this is just what, when I, you know, this is just my initial, my, what I'm taken away from it. That, you know, that again, you know, it just seems to me that it's a lot to ask for someone. It's like, okay, now we're in a relationship, now it's your job to make me happy. It's like, no, I mean, you both are, in my opinion, you know, you both arrive into the relationship and hoped, I don't know, it just seems, just that setup, it just seems like a lot of codependence there.
What I took from it was the commitment factor, and for him it was, he chose marriage. That doesn't mean that that's the only way to go about it. And
right.
when you make a commitment to somebody, you follow through. And you do your best to follow through no matter what. You just make that decision and you do your best and you hope for the best. And there are no promises. There are no guarantees in life. And that's what I took from it, that, but it's very, very much pro-marriage. And I just, the way it was written was very, I just thought it was very well written. And
yeah, I definitely got the commitment part out of it, for sure. I mean, if you do get into a committed relationship, marriage or married or otherwise, yeah, you do have to, there is a, I don't know how to put a I don't want to say negotiation, but compromise, you know, as far as everyone kind of gives a little of what, you know, what they want selfishly. And so hopefully, we all meet somewhere in the middle. So yeah, I agree there is some to that, but I don't, just when I saw him use that statement multiple times throughout mm-hmm. the blog post, it's like, I'm gonna make so and so person happy. Then you get into a realm of, okay, they're not happy, something's wrong with me. You know, because I know, well, for instance, I know Scarlett gets into kind of a bit of a depressed state this time of year. Well, her current blog should be evidence of that. I mean, if I had the philosophy that in this relationship, part of it was, you know, making Scarlett happy, I would be a fucking mess right now. And that's toxic to a relationship, in my opinion.
Right. Right. That's not, but on the other hand, I think that the article speaks more to the commitment factor. Although he is talking about that too. I mean, a big part of that is making, you know, you get married for other people. You get married for that. Marriage isn't for you.
Right,
it's
right.
For your partner. That's his point. But the other side of that, what I found that I took from it was the commitment factor, whether you're married or not. You just get it in your head and that's what you do. And you roll with that.
Yeah, I definitely agree that most of it was, you know, talking about all this extra stuff that you consider when marrying somebody that you don't necessarily consider just when you're dating. I definitely agree with that. But for whatever reason, you know, that one little see this, you know, just kind of the fault, you know, one of my faults here that, you know, I just took this one little part of the blog and for whatever reason that got into my craw a bit.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that there's one side of it and then there's another side of it. And what you're saying isn't wrong. It's just that he's also saying some other things that, and my whole thing about wanting you to read the article was take what you can from it and discard the rest. And I warned you that it was very pro-marriage.
Yeah.
And I wasn't planting any ideas in your head because I am not pro-marriage at all. I don't think marriage is one of those things that works for some people and it doesn't work for others. Monogamy works for some people and it doesn't work for others. And, you know, and that's just, you know, that's just my take on it. So,
kind of keeping with the marriage theme, recently there's a ballot initiative put out here in Colorado to make a requisite for pre-marriage counseling for anybody that wants to get married, which first off, I do not agree with.
As somebody who's been married, I will tell you right now, premarital classes do not save you. And this is just stupid. Whoever came up with this is not being realistic. For one thing, most ministers, if you're going to be married in a church, are going to require some sort of premarital counseling. That's going to be a requirement. They're asking, I think the initiative is recommending or requiring, first time marriage, it's 20 hours. I can tell you that most ministers are going to require more than that. Depending upon what denomination and what, if you're Catholic, if you're, you know, what denomination, you know, if you're Catholic, it's going to be one thing. If you're Baptist,
Catholic is pre-Cana.
You know, it depends. Being that in my case, my father was my minister, and believe me, he required quite a bit. Although he was not the one doing the counseling,
that might have been awkward.
he was smart about that. He was not. He was like, look, I want you to get some counseling, but I'm not going to be the one doing it. And we had a family friend who actually did the counseling, who I had known since I was 18 months old. So I considered him to be very knowledgeable. And actually, it was he and his wife, so it was a couple thing. And, you know, but it doesn't save you. And they're saying that they're going to give tax breaks for those that continue with marriage counseling throughout the marriage. And that's stupid too, because counseling doesn't save you. You're not looking at the big picture. You're not looking at if you're not willing to put the work into it, and marriage is work.
Mm-hmm.
And any relationship is work.
Right.
It's like slapping a Band-Aid on a gaping wound and expecting that to be the cure for stopping divorce. And that's asinine. And why? And this is a California-based organization,
right? That
kind of,
yeah, exactly.
And then they're gonna say Colorado should be the test subject. Bullshit. Okay, you're going to base it in your own state. Do it in your own goddamn state.
Exactly.
Then you can spread it. You know, if it works in your state, then you can suggest it in other states. But don't come in here in our state. And, you know, this one pissed me off, believe me, as someone who's been married and divorced. And, you know, and you get divorced for a variety of reasons. And, you know, getting married too young, counseling isn't going to save you. You know, and being mismatched, getting married for wrong reasons, being in love with the idea of being in love. There are so many things. There are so many considerations, and being stubborn, just, you know, everybody else saying or being told, you know, this is not a good match, this is not a good idea. People are going to do whatever the hell they're going to do. And counseling is not going to save anything.
Now,
and this is just garbage.
Now, I do want to make the point that we are not suggesting to not get counseling.
No,
but it's not,
no.
Counseling is not the end-all, be-all solution.
No, I'm just saying that what they're saying, what this particular organization, I can't remember the name of it, that's pushing for it, the ones that are pushing for the initiative.
Yeah. Kids Against Divorce.
Which
is what, yeah.
Okay. Well, their whole premise is that premarital counseling is going to save marriages. And that's just not realistic. And
no.
It's just not people are going to elope. People are going to, and they should have the right to do that. People get married for a variety of reasons. I just heard an interview with Anne Prechette, and she was against getting married, and she was with her now husband for 11 years. He had a health scare, and it was a matter of, we have to get married so that I can make decisions about your, if you ever have to go on life support, and we have to make these decisions now. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with whether we care about each other and whether we're committed to each other. This is what we have to do to, and they've been married for a number of years now, and they're very happily married. But they didn't need the government to tell them, oh, you need all this counseling. Bullshit. People get married for a variety of reasons. They get married, how dare the government come in, some organization come in and say, you have to have all of this counseling. You know, what if you have somebody who's terminally ill? They don't have time. And then the article that will be in the show notes also described, if you're poor and you can't afford the classes, then you can't get married. And that's bullshit too.
Yeah.
So absolutely. You know what? Take your initiative in California, put it in California. And when it fails there, then it'll just fail. But don't bring it to Colorado and expect us to be overjoyed about it. And how many signatures did it need? It needed some ungodly amount of signatures to go through.
It's like 40,000 or something like that.
No, we're not going to sign off on this because we're smarter than that. And even with all the the Bible thumpers, we're smarter than this. And I have every faith in the Colorado people that we're not going to sign off
on this. It's actually 86,000. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, even more.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we're smarter than that. We're not going to sign off on this. We're not, you know, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, they made fun of Focus on the Family, you know, focus on your own damn family. Well, you know what? Focus on your own damn family in California. And shove this initiative down their throat. Don't shove it down ours. And that's what I think that if this had been a Colorado organization, maybe I wouldn't be as angry. But no.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, don't come into our state and expect us just to swallow this shit, because we're not going to. And, you know, as somebody who's been divorced, and, you know, she says, well, I did everything right. The lady, the spokesperson for Kids Against Divorce, she said, well, I did everything right in my second marriage, and I got counseling and everything, and the marriage only lasted 1 month and 25 days. Well, then why are you saying counseling is the answer? You just
said it doesn't work for you.
It doesn't work. So I don't understand it. No. And like I said, you know, and I'm not advocating that you not get premarital counseling. It is tremendously helpful. It is. You do learn what you have in common, and you learn how to cope, and you learn what to expect living together, especially if you're not living together, if you've chosen not to live together before you get married, which my husband and I had not. And we were both virgins, and, you know, we made those decisions together, and I don't regret regret any of that, but the marriage still failed. And, you know, but so I'm not advocating not getting counseling. I'm upset at the type of counseling and the fact that they're having it government mandated. That's right. Crap. That's crap. Because if I can't afford counseling, then I can't get married. That's bullshit. Because that's not a decision that a government should be
right,
able to make.
Exactly. That's, I mean,
and tell me that I have to have these classes, because you have no idea why I'm getting married. You have no idea why I've made that decision. You have no fucking idea. And for you to sit there and tell me, yeah, I have to have these classes before I can get married, you know, the time is ticking.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have that time. You don't know.
Yeah.
And that's just bullshit.
And,
so,
maybe it's not the kind of relationship that requires counseling.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know?
It could be political. It could be in name only. It could be an open relationship. Just because it's marriage doesn't even mean it's monogamous.
That's very true.
You have no idea. You have no idea. And for you to say that we have to undergo counseling, I've seen counseling destroy relationships as much as save them. So, no, it's individual, you know, how much commitment there is between the two people to work things out. You know, Peter and I have gone through this, okay? You know, I'm in therapy. We've talked about getting some couples counseling, which we have agreed that we're going to have a certain amount of. We've had extensive couples therapy, and we've had no couples therapy at different times in our relationship. And then we go middle of the road sometimes, but it's not the therapy that saves our relationship. It's our commitment to each other, and it's our willingness to work through our crap. And there are no, you know, and if you talk to Peter, his response is there are no guarantees. There's no such thing as forever. We don't know if we're going to be together forever. We may break up tomorrow. We don't know. And it's really up to us, not some therapist, to sit there and save our relationship. And if you have to rely on a counselor to save your relationship, maybe you should rethink that relationship. That's just what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So for that organization to say that their whole premise is that premarital counseling will save marriages, it's just crap. Their whole premise is just crap. So anyway, I'm off my soapbox.
Although one, you know, they did mention, you know, one of their goals was to lower the divorce. Well, it will lower divorce rate because less people will be getting married.
Because they won't be able to afford it, for
yeah,
one thing.
Exactly.
And, you know, it just, you know, and again, I'm not advocating that premarital counseling is not a good idea, because I think it is a good idea. There are definitely some pros to that.
But it's not a one size fits all.
Right. But I think you can get it through the church. I think you can get it. And I personally, the therapy that I'm getting now, I went out of my way to make sure it wasn't religious based. That was my choice. So it just, you know, there are different things you can do and that don't cost a lot of money. And to have the government come in and stick their fingers in it, it's just bullshit. Just bullshit.
And there was one article that I found interesting that I'm actually curious about your opinion on. It's on the New York Times. It's about it prefaces it with Tom Daley, who's an Olympic swimmer, that he came out as being bisexual, and then it went into this whole discussion as for pretty much the short end of it is bisexuals, whether they're, you know, man or woman, is just a homosexual in hiding.
Okay, I'm getting on my soapbox again, because this is okay. First of all, they use the term, they still use this archaic term, homophobia. First of all, there's no such thing as homophobia. There's just not, because there's not a fear of homosexuality. There's just not.
Would you mind elaborating on that?
Yeah, I'm trying to put it into words. To say it doesn't exist, that's not actually true. I think homophobia still exists, but it's not in the term. The term homophobia has evolved. It's changed. It's not the same as it was intended. There's not a fear of homosexuality. It's more of a hate thing. And what they're now saying, the new term is biphobia. And this just sticks in my craw because I am not a lesbian. I like male anatomy, and I'm bisexual. And I've known I was bisexual since I was a very young child. So I didn't act on it until I was 27. Acting on it was a whole nother issue. But my own coming to terms with that, I had to come to terms with it in such a way that finding my own identity. And it really had nothing to do with who I sleep with. It really had nothing to do with what I was attracted to. It really just had to do with my upbringing, the fact that my father was a Pentecostal minister, and sex in general was just not acceptable. So if I like sex, if sex is bad, and I like sex and I really like sex, then that means I'm bad too. That's what I had to come to terms with. And the fact that I was attracted to women as well as men was secondary. But I was so torn up in knots about my bisexuality that it took me I could accept the fact I was polyamorous a lot easier than accepting the fact I was bisexual. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I had a friend who told me, the world is not going to fly off its axis and crash into the sun if you sleep with a woman, and damned if he wasn't right. And my first girlfriend was not playing with a full deck. It was a very short-lived relationship. She was very insecure. It was one of those things that it was a stepping stone for me. My next girlfriend was really not playing with a full deck. We call that the family circus. There's a big long story behind that. I worked with her ex-husband who set me up. I dated her current husband. I mean, just a whole bunch of crap happened in that relationship. So it was, I had to come to terms with not dating in a circle. That's just not a good idea. I had to learn about boundaries. And I think that was the harder thing than actually a sexual relationship with a woman. Setting boundaries for myself was way harder than actually accepting the fact that I was attracted to both men and women. When I took my first sociology class, the first thing I realized was that the definition of bisexuality is being attracted to both members of the sex. And I realized that you don't choose who you're attracted to. You don't. Right. You don't get to choose that. What you choose is whether you act on it or not. And I didn't act on it for a long time. And then when I did, it was very liberating for me. But it was also liberating not to act on it, to control my impulses, my urges, to be okay not to have a sexual relationship with somebody I was attracted to. That was okay too. So, I mean, it was a long process for me to be at peace with the fact I'm bisexual. But because I'm bisexual, I can tell you, I am not a lesbian. I'm very much into men. What I get from women is more emotional than physical. So the article talks about the stigma that's still attached with being bisexual, and that bisexuality, especially for men, is considered just a gateway into homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bullshit. Not all not all bisexual men turn out to be homosexual. Right. Not all bisexual women turn out to be lesbians. Now, do all lesbians go through that stage of being bisexual? I think they do in some regard. I think that there is that step. I understand that, but confusing the two is not fair. I mean, and it happens. However, here in Denver, in the circles that I've been involved with, I don't run into that. People are very accepting of, hey, we don't really care who you sleep with, what you sleep with, what you know, if you're happy, if you're not hurting anybody, who cares? It just doesn't matter. And so the whole article just talks about the stigmas that's still attached to especially bisexual men. And I know quite a few bisexual men that you would not think at first glance. Very masculine. Yeah, very yeah, masculine very much men so.
Yeah.
That you would not, I mean, you could probably count on two hands, a couple of them. I mean, you know, that you would not know if they didn't come out and tell you. But I also run in circles where they're very trans, you know, we know a lot of transgendered people.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
There's a very vibrant transgender, transsexual, community here in Denver.
And I don't think it's a Colorado thing. I think it's a Denver
Yeah.
thing. Because going south of here in Colorado Springs, where I grew up, it's not the same. It being, you know, you don't come out. You know, even in polyamory, even the polyamory community is very, very much in its infancy. And it's still kind of underground. And you have to hunt for it. And you have to, you know, it's coming out a little at a time, but it's not evolved where Denver is. So Denver, Boulder, you know, that kind, you know, I think that we're just in a really good place where we don't run into that, but I know it happens. And I've talked to men in the community who are bisexual and they say that they're not out to everybody, and others are very much out. So I think it just depends on how much grief you want to take.
Well, and one of the arguments in the article that the article states, the article doesn't actually make this argument, it's just reporting on it, that a lot of people kind of have or saying that bisexual or no, a woman that's saying she's bisexual is really just a lesbian in hiding, or you know, the same kind of thing with the guys, which to me it kind of sounds like on the same level of Chasing Amy, if you just, I'm actually going to reference the first evening with Kevin Smith, where they actually reference Chasing Amy. He's talking with a lesbian woman, and he mentions, you know, saying that that some people have made the argument that in that movie they say that all lesbians just need a good dick to turn them around. To me, that's those two different arguments are kind of like on the same intellectual level. Like, it's making the argument that a lesbian is just needs one good dick to turn them around. It's kind of on the same level as saying a lesbian is just a bisexual woman in hiding, and same place with the men. I know that was a real convoluted, but
well, and I just don't, you know, and I know that happens, but I just think that we don't see a lot of it in our circles because we're just in a different evolved place. We just don't run into a whole lot of that.
I think it's just a lot more fluid here, and I think there's it's a lot more pansexual.
And it's kind of weird because I think that in a lot of my experience has been, it's assumed that women are bi. It's assumed. It's unusual for my female friends to say, no, I'm completely straight. And yet I know a few. My best friend is completely straight, straight as an arrow. Never even thought about being with another woman. And I doubt that she ever would. I don't think that, I think that she's toyed with it and it just doesn't particularly appeal to her. So, you know, and I know a few other people like that. It's very rare in the circles that I run in because most of my friends are bi.
Yeah, I find that in poly circles, mm-hmm. that the ratio of heterosexual women is to bisexual women is very small.
And it's rare. It's also rare in our circles to find pure lesbians, although they exist. They do exist, and so it just. But it is, if you were to take a poll, they'll tell you it's just assumed the women are bisexual in the poly community. And that's not a fair assumption either. So it just really depends upon if the situation, I guess. And not everybody is out. And not everybody wants, because they're going to catch some grief. And it's a matter of, okay, do you want to catch the grief or not? I made a determination a long time ago that grief or no grief, I was going to live my life just the way that I was going to be real. And I had to get away from my family to do that. And then when I came out to my family, my family has been less than understanding. They've tried to be supportive. They've tried to be okay with the fact that I'm poly, but they're not because they don't understand it. But they try. They're trying to make that effort. And so it really depends. Not everybody's willing to take the grief. So I don't agree with everything in the article, but I understand that it does happen. I just don't see a lot of it here in Denver.
And the article does end with a great, great quote from Dr. Diamond. They're talked in reference to the younger generation. They're more open to the idea that, hey, sexuality is complicated, and as long as I know who I want to sleep with, it doesn't matter what I call myself.
Labels, yeah. Labels are just a lot of people that I know don't want to have a label at all. And I will say this. I think that Tom Daly, the reason why I think there was such an uproar, not because he was bisexual so much, but his current lover is almost 2 decades older than he is. And I think that's what he got the backlash for. That, well, you're young and impressionable. We'll see where you're at in 10 years. I think that was a lot of the backlash. But what he's feeling is no less real.
Right.
And so what? In 10 years, maybe he'll be with a woman. It doesn't make what he's going through now any less authentic, real, or meaningful. So...
Well, and
who made you God to sit there and judge him anyway?
Right. And, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the people, I mean, if you talk to anyone in the LGBT community, whether they knew for sure whether they were gay, you know, what their actual, you know, orientation was at 19, you know, I bet you a good deal of them would be like, no, I was still trying shit out, you know?
Right. So why he's catching, why this is such a controversy is just, who cares?
Yeah.
My philosophy has always been, if I'm not sleeping with you and you're not sleeping with anybody that I'm sleeping with, then what business is it of mine who you're sleeping with.
Right.
It's just not. And any more than it's your business who I'm sleeping with if I'm not sleeping with you or anybody you're sleeping with. Period. So I don't know what the big honking controversy is. He says he still likes girls, and maybe it's because he protests too much. Maybe that's the argument. I don't know. But you know what? Who cares? He identifies as being bisexual. Let him have that.
It's his
identity.
Yeah, I definitely... I'm what some people might call heteroflexible. I'm definitely, on the, lean towards, going for the lady parts. Well, obviously, I'm dating Scarlett, so, so obviously I'm not, every once in a while I have, these fleeting images of, being intimate with a guy, not necessarily sexual,
intimacy doesn't always involve sex.
Yeah, exactly. So, I won't deny that does exist within me. I just don't have a strong, pursuit for it. just listen towards the end of last episode, I'm like waxing poetic about River Song. So yeah, you tell me what. So anyway, I'm kind of moving on. Recently, Katie Couric, this, we're kind of talking cannabis news here. Katie Couric did some interviews with in regards to what's happened here in Denver, or in Colorado, actually, not just Denver. But one of the interviews that she had was in regards to talking about this with the children, in which she talked to two people. One woman, I believe she was a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and the other one was more in law enforcement, I think. We'll put the link in the show notes. So I just can't think of off the top of my head, but I was much more I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But
I think he was more balanced. The psychiatrist or the therapist, she was using outdated statistics.
Yeah, very much so.
Statistics that they've been quoting for the last 15 years. Stuff that I can pull sociology papers that I did 10 years ago where I had that data. So it's very, very outdated material.
And plus, she made the gateway drug argument, which is pretty much that myth is, there is a correlation, but correlation doesn't necessarily equal causation.
Well, and what they screwed up on is they didn't address medical marijuana. Had they at least mentioned that, she might have had a little more credibility. But she also, what she was saying, was very outdated. Just the statistics that she was quoting, she was spewing them like vomit, and it was rapid fire, kind of like distracting. It was like, here, look up here, shiny, 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 but don't listen to the crap that I'm really actually saying. Right. If you actually analyzed what she was saying, it was like, okay, what you just said contradicted what you just said.
Yeah.
So she.
Yeah, for me, when she did the gateway drug argument, she lost all credibility with me, which was like the second thing she said.
Well, and she was, it wasn't even that. If she had stopped there, she might have had a string of credibility.
No,
but she kept spewing outdated data, and that's where so. When you listen to it, take it with a grain of salt, because it's all outdated material. But the other guy that they had on there, he was very, I think he was more balanced.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't discounting what she was saying, but he was balancing.
He provided some context.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it was more fair balanced. I do think it was funny that Katie Couric made this comment that she was about as Lily White as they come, or what was it that she said?
Oh, that was in the other interview with the dispensary owner that she made some comment. I'm square as they come.
Yeah,
you know.
And I thought that was kind of funny. And I thought it was funny that the dispensary owner, that interview, at the very end, she asked him if he used his own product, because he was really passionate about putting out this quality product, and yet he doesn't use it himself. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, he did mention, you know, one big reason why he's real excited about it is that he hears from all of the patients that he serves about the ways that they help them.
Right, and he was definitely medical marijuana.
Oh yeah, well, and I mean, he owns a medical marijuana dispensary. He better be pro.
Right, but he was talking about that aspect of it, and that I just thought it was very telling that he was pretty much like, well, I'm excited about it because I know it helps people, but he didn't go into great detail about that, and nor did he go into, you know, he was like, no, I don't use it myself. And I thought that was actually, I had more respect for him just mm-hmm. coming out and just saying that, that no, I don't use it. It's kind of like, I don't need it, therefore I don't use it. I don't use it recreationally.
He mentioned that he doesn't like the way that it affects him.
Right. And so. He also, the other guy, the law enforcement or whatever, he made the statement that some people can handle it and some people can't. Some people can handle their liquor, some people can't. So I thought the way that he stated his case was way more credible than the psychologist. Mm-hmm. And I just found it a very interesting interview from that standpoint. But yeah, she was spewing a bunch of, and you know, the way she presented it rubbed me the wrong way. Because she was just, literally, she's just spewing these statistics like vomit. Just one right after the other, so you can't even process it.
Yeah.
And then you don't even realize it's outdated.
Yeah, from very specious tests at that.
And then you go through and you really think about what she just said, and you're like, whoa, that's outdated material. And therefore, you have no credibility. So.
Yeah, I like that whoever set up this these interviews and whatnot, I definitely have to commend them, because you know, you saw different sides of the entire thing, and I like that, you know, you can definitely see, okay, yeah, these two people are kind of saying sense, okay. She's fucking nuts. So that was good to see. And also, I will be posting a link to a news story read about testing. It's a feature on a lab here in Denver. And this is an aspect about regulation that, you know, will pay dividends pretty much, because up until now, they've been doing it with the medical stuff, but that's been voluntary. But anyway, throughout the spring and summer, they're going to be putting more requirements for actually testing the product, not just for, you know, what cannabinoids are in there, but for other stuff like mold and, you know, residue from pesticides and other stuff that, you know, shows up. So that there's an aspect of regulation that will go, because at this point, I mean, for all we know, you know, everyone's been smoking, you know, spoke stuff with mold and salmonella, you know, all this other stuff that's, you know, in there in trace amounts. But again, no one's been testing it.
Right. In the article, they were interviewing somebody who was saying that they're, because it's not required at this point, that they're more concerned, because marijuana can't kill you, they're more concerned about like a salmonella breakout or something like that, making somebody really, really sick and possibly killing them, and then them linking it back to marijuana and making, saying that's what killed them is marijuana, when marijuana won't kill you.
Right.
And that's where the tax, you know, that's where the regulation comes in, is that it all needs to be.
Well, and they did mention that, you know, up to this point, if they did find any contaminations in that whatever, you know, dispensary came, you know, they were like really quick to, you know, it's like, oh, okay, we got to change this and this and this in our process to keep it from from this showing up. So that's been
real effective at this point. What they have found is the testing is cutting down on the spreading of any thing that they are finding. So, but there's only 3 labs doing it, and they're not doing it, you know, it's all voluntary at this point. So, it seems like they're really busy, because all the medical marijuana dispensaries are fully cooperating. And so hopefully that will continue in that same vein.
And let's move on to something else here. There's a new show out on Stars, which Scarlett's really particularly interested in, Black Sails, and the first episode came out actually last night at the time of this recording, and it'll be real interesting to see how that all shakes out.
I'm really impressed with how, for those of you who don't know, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on here.
I'm not sure we have talked about it on the podcast.
I am currently working on a novel or a series of novels. I haven't really decided yet, about Anne Bonny and Mary Read, and which are female pirates in history. And I'm doing a hell of a lot of research, and I've been doing this research off and on for the last 10 years, and I'm just now getting serious about it. I've kind of have an idea of where I want to go with the story, but I'm not real sure how it's all going to shape up yet. But in the research aspect of it, I have a hell of a lot of things I've been researching, and I was real curious about how accurate they were going to stay, and I'm pretty impressed. However, I will tell you that this Black Sails is supposed to be a prequel to Treasure Island, which right there puts some fictional accountability on it, and there are some things that I think they're going to probably put some things in there that are not going to fit with the timeline. So they're probably going to screw with the timeline. I can forgive them for that, because I think they can weave it in there. And if you don't know about the timeline, if you don't know about the history, if you haven't researched like I have, you probably aren't even going to know. Just little things. Big thing is if they bring in Brethren of the Coast. I'm curious if they're going to do that. Henry Morgan, if they're going to bring that in. There's just a whole bunch of things that they could do with it that I don't know if they're going to do. However, I do know they're going to bring Anne Bonny in. I don't know where. The first episode kind of alludes to a character that may be her, may not be her. We don't know. So it should be interesting to see who this particular character turns out to be. So far though, I'm kind of impressed with how historically they've done a pretty good job so far, but we're one episode in, so
yeah. And I'm thinking this is going to be similar to Braveheart in that, well, before I kind of delve into that, all right, so much of what we know about pirates is you know, the line between what's legend and what's actually true is really squirrely. Really, I mean, there's a lot of gray area.
And this is particularly true with Anne Bonny. It's like Billy the Kid. There's a lot of legend. There's a lot of fact blends with legend. You don't, you know, there's just a lot to sort through.
Right.
Anne Bonny is very similar. I will tell you that to put Anne Bonny in this, she would have to be a young child. Again, screwing with the timeline to get her in there as an adult, which I think they're going to do. But like I said, if you didn't know the timeline, you wouldn't know that.
Because the first episode, they say, you know, in the opening credits that it's 1715. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure when Anne Bonny was...
1713.
So yeah, you know, so she's like, you know, in our terrible twos at this point. But again, not, you know, most people don't know that. So I think this with Black Sails, this series, that it's going to be very much like Braveheart with William Wallace, because again, there's another figure where there's so much legend wrapped around it that it's tough to get, you know, it's not much as well. William Wallace actually predated what's going on with Black Sails by at least 100 years. So with Black Sails, I think it's going to be the same kind of premise where they take what they do, you know, what we do know about it, and kind of creatively fill in the rest in a way that makes sense and that's entertaining.
But I do find it interesting that I do not see a mention of Mary Read, which Anne Bonny and Mary Read kind of go hand in hand, mm-hmm. but I don't see
they were alive at pretty much the same mm-hmm. time.
And their stories are very much intertwined. I won't spoil it, but their storyline is very much intertwined. So the way that they died in particular. So or allegedly died. So there's just a lot of...
You mean there's a possibility they may still be alive and with us?
No, it's just that they may not have died the way that legend says they did.
Gotcha.
But it just... I have to accept the fact that there's going to be a certain amount of fictionality, because it is the prequel to Treasure Island, which Treasure Island, what we know about piracy, as far as a lot of what we do know, came from Treasure Island, because that was like the first book about piracy that came out. So even though it was a fictional account, I mean, it talks about a lot of different things. So, and ironically, I've never read that all the way through. So that's on my reading list, but it's part of my research. But just a lot of pirates were active at that same time. So it should be interesting to see what they're going to do. But so far they've got, I mean, like, I saw one thing that they probably wouldn't have done. A couple of things for entertainment's sake that they probably glossed over that they could have addressed, but...
Such as?
Well, it's amazing how much literacy, how literate that these pirates really were. And they could have addressed that. When a pirate joins, at this time in history, when a pirate would join a crew, he was forced to, before he could join the crew, he had to sign the articles. And the articles varied by ship and by captain. and
pretty much their bylaws, right?
Basically, this is what you agree to live by. If you violate these rules, you agree to punishment. Whether you know, and this punishment can vary from a flogging to banishment. I mean, although that very rarely happened, believe it or not, but so they have this one character. He asks to be made a member of the crew because
who is a major character on Treasure Island.
Yes, he's a major. And we won't spoil it for you, but he gets himself in this really squonky situation, and he asks to be made part of the pirate crew because his own crew is probably going to kill him if he doesn't do something. And they just take him on. Don't ask him to sign anything. Don't read him anything. They just take him at his word that he's the cook. And I doubt this boy has cooked a day in his life. He assumes the identity of somebody that he accidentally killed. And, well, accidentally, I won't spoil it for you again. But it's interesting how they could have played that in, where they could have said, here, read this and sign it. If you understand it, read it. You know, sign it. That's all it would have taken. But it's very evident that he is literate, because there's this very central piece of reading that keeps showing up, and he definitely understands it, and he knows what is in his possession. So, but that they got right, because they were privateers. They started out as privateers, which were very learned men, and they got screwed over by the government one too many times, and they turned to piracy.
Yeah, I mean, these are people that are used to having to keep inventory and, you know, stuff like that. So obviously, you know, they had to find a way to track it, and, you know.
But not all pirates could read. That, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, fair point.
But a good majority.
I'm sure, like, well, the people that ended up being like kind of like officer, but anyway, that, you know, captains, yeah, and that kind of thing. You know, I'm sure those that group,
and they do have
know,
somebody who does account for, you know, they have somebody who is the record keeper, and you know they have him and he is keeping record and keeping track, and they have the captain log, and that's very detailed, and that's all the records of what's going on in the ship, and you know, so but that's a very central part to the story, and I think that they could expand on that about just how literate most of those pirates are going to be.
Now, it wouldn't surprise me if they do incorporate, you know, some, you know, the signing of the articles later on in the series, because again, we're only one episode in. It's just, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, they might incorporate that and build it into a, you know, kind of have it be like the beginning of an exciting scene, like they ask, you know, some kind of ancillary character. It's like, okay, you know, sign the articles, and for whatever reason, whoever they're not, you know, and he's like, fuck you, I'm not gonna, you know, and moves to stab him or something, and then, you know, a battle erupts or something like that. They may incorporate it into a more exciting scene later in the series.
True, what they usually would do, and I don't know that this is for entertainment purposes. They probably will gloss over this, but each pirate voyage, they had the pirate crew agree again to the articles. So the articles could be modified. They could change again according to ship, according to captain. So it should be interesting, you know, but I'm a stickler for details, so I notice stuff like that. The other thing is they called out, and they would call, I think they called out sails, and that's not what they would call out when they saw another ship. They would call out, I can't remember the word, but it wouldn't have been sails. It would have been something else. It would have been like, I can't think of it right now, but it would have been something along the lines of basically, you know, hey, there's another ship. So sails is about as close as you can get. So
Like ahoy or something like that.
Yeah, ahoy ship or ahoy or something like that. It would have been more like that.
Avast, maybe. I don't know.
Not avast. Avast means stop. Oh. Stop what you're doing. Ahoy.
Okay.
Ahoy would have probably been it.
I just named a few of the pirate terms that I know. So
ahoy was the word I was thinking of.
Oh, okay.
But they said sails instead. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that, I don't pick on. But the timeline, I'm not gonna pick apart, because I realize they're going to have to, in order to incorporate everything that they want to incorporate, they're going to have to play with the timeline. They just are. So, but it ought to be interesting. It looks like, and it was very well acted, I thought, very well written so far. So we'll see how it goes.
And, you know, kind of one, you know, we've been wow, okay, we've already over an hour here. One last thing I want to touch on that really got my, if you want to talk about, you know, giggling like a 13-year-old boy, Marvel just recently announced that we'll have a traveling roadshow called the Marvel Experience. And pretty much what it's going to end up being is this big complex where it'll be like walking through a comic book, where you're actually walking through a storyline, and you know it's more interactive than just a comic book. No dates have been announced.
They have to have a hell of a lot of land to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the marvelexperience.com, which I will put in the show notes. And if they end up stopping within a 300-mile radius of Denver, I'll be there. definitely want to check that out. They are on Twitter, and you know they sign up for newsletters. They're looking to actually get started in the spring or in the spring and summer of this year. So definitely excited about that. We're gonna call it there, because I'm sure most of you have fallen off in boredom. No. As I mentioned earlier, we are on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and Google Plus. All of those links can be found on hovpodcast.wordpress.com. And we'll definitely appreciate any feedback and comments and that kind of stuff. And our voicemail number is 231-846-8420. It can be found on Twitter. That is @HOV Podcast. And again, my personal Twitter handle is @inspiration_flow. And our email is hovpodcast@gmail.com.